it's good to be here this morning. As we've said, a lot of our women are at our women's retreat, and they've had a great time. You know, it's a good time when you, and this isn't, don't tell my wife Elise that I said this as a bad thing, because it's not. But you know, it's a good time when you don't really hear much. Like, you text and you don't get a response back, and you just know because they're busy, right? They're having a good time. So I've heard they've had a great time. And so myself kind of had like a guy's weekend. And so for those of you who know me, I'll give you three guesses what I had for dinner last night. Yes, guess number one. I had some pizza last night. Which was awesome, because Elise actually can't have dairy right now, so it really limits the amount of pizza that I can have. So it's just a challenge. Just, you know, it's we compromise marriage, right? So yeah, it's good to be here this morning, and we're starting a new series called Snapshots, and it's a different look at characters in the Bible. And so leading up to Mother's Day, we're going to be looking at different women in the Bible and their stories and what we can learn from that. And then after that, leading up to Father's Day, we'll look at men in the Bible, look at their lives and what we can learn from it and all of that. And so they decided, we're starting off this morning with a story of Esther. So looking at a woman in the Bible. And they thought, well, we're starting off this series on, you know, women in the Bible, and we need someone who really just is an expert on women. And so we talked as a staff, and it was unanimous that they chose me to do this, because they thought no one knows women better than Christian. That's just so so they chose me. And so looking at Esther today, and I have to be honest, I love looking at stories in the Bible. I love reading about people in the Bible. I love reading about this that happened and this character and this person, because it reminds me that it's real people in the Bible. Sometimes we read it, and we read it as like it's a book and they're just characters or that sort of thing, but it's real people's lives that are in the Bible. And so I love reading through stories like the story of Esther, because, yeah, it reminds me, this is a real person. It allows me to think and put myself in their situation and think, what would I do in that situation? What would I choose? What would I say? What would I do? And so I love stories in the Bible. I just love stories in general. I love reading stories, watching stories, hearing stories. I just love stories. And so in this series, we're going to look at stories in the Bible about starting with women, then to men. And so again, we're looking at Esther this morning. So Esther, if you could make like a commercial, like, you know, when you like see like a movie or like it's like a tagline for someone, that for Esther, that would be, this is the story of a Jewish girl who becomes the queen of Persia, who stops a plan to destroy all the Jewish people. That's the tagline. And so we're going to look at this story, and we're going to get three things at the end that we can take away from her life. And so starting off in this time, there was this king in the Persian Empire, this person who's really, really in charge. I've been struggling with his name, so I'm going to say it my best, and then I'm just going to, after that, just say the king. So here's his name. His name is Ahasuerus, is his name. Ahasuerus, King Ahasuerus. So he is the Persian Empire, and he's arguably at this time the most powerful man in the world. Like, super, super powerful man. In fact, when we pick up the story at the beginning of Esther, he is just finishing a seven-day-long feast. A seven-day-long feast. I've never been to a seven-day-long feast. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it's like just you're constantly eating slowly, if it's just like you eat and then you talk and then you eat. I don't know what it looks like. Sounds awesome. But they're finishing a seven-day-long feast after a six-month display of power. So this guy is so powerful, he decided, we need to let everyone know just how powerful I am. So I'm going to plan a six-month showing of how powerful I am, and I'm going to finish it with a seven-day feast. And so at the end of this feast, he sends for his wife, Queen Vashti, and says, hey, like, tells his servants, bring my wife, the queen, to me. And basically what he's wanting to do is just show off how beautiful his wife is. So this guy is like, yeah, like, I'm just going to show off for 6 months how awesome I am, and then we're going to finish with a seven-day feast, and then, yeah, bring my wife, and let's just, you know, we'll show her off. Everyone can see, like, I'm like, yeah, I got it good. I'm living the good life right now. But the queen says, because she's actually hosting people herself, so she says, no, I'm not going to come. And so the servants return and say, like, king, like, she said no, like, she's not going to come. And so he says to himself, well, like, I can't have that. Like, I'm the king. I'm the most powerful man in the world. So I can't have my queen saying no to me. And his fear was that if he, as king, allows his wife to, like, you know, undermine him by not showing up and showing off how pretty she is, I know, doesn't do that, then maybe all the other wives in the kingdom will do the same. And so talking with his advisors, they decide, you know what? I think the only mature response is just, let's not make her queen anymore. Let's just take away her crown. And so that's what they do. So they say, you're no longer the queen. We're taking away your crown. And then as a little jab, parting shot, he says, let's give me all the beautiful women, bring them to me, and I want to choose a new queen. And this is obviously before they couldn't just go on Instagram, couldn't go on like Christian Mingle, all that kind of stuff. And so he sends people out and says, like, just find someone. If they're good looking, ask them if they're married. And if they're not, and if they're young, then bring them to me. And then I'll just look at them and I'll just choose. And so that's where Esther enters the story. And so in Esther chapter 2, verse 7 to 9, it says this. He was bringing up Hazadiah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at. And when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So when the king's order and his edicts were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel in custody of Hajai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in the custody of Hajai, who had charge of the woman, and the young woman pleased him and won his favor, and he quickly provided her with cosmetics and her portion of food, and with seven chosen young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. Esther 2, verse 7 to 9. I don't know if you noticed this. I laughed pretty hard when I realized that this is what was going on here. So here's what happens. Esther is traveling with Mordecai, who's her cousin, because Esther, both her, all her family's dead. So Mordecai is like her last kind of relative, and so he's taken her on as his own daughter. And so she's seen, and she's beautiful, and so hey, let's bring her before the king. And the king instantly is like, I like this girl, so like I need to show her. And so what does he do? He gives her cosmetics, and he gives her food. To me, this is hilarious, because guys, it just shows me that we still have no clue what we're doing to this day. Because we're still like, I like this girl, so like, how about I take you to Sephora, and I'll just buy you some stuff, and then we can go to Chipotle, and I'll buy you some food, right? We have no idea. So he's like, I like this girl, give her some cosmetics, give her some food, and then she knows that I'm into her. Then she really knows that I'm into her. And so, as I said earlier, Esther is a Jewish girl, but Mordecai tells her, like, hey, maybe don't advertise that, like, to the king, just kind of hide that. If he, like, don't lie, but kind of hide that. And so she's a Jewish girl, but it's kind of on the low for right now. And before Esther can be brought before the king again, she had to go through this beautifying process that is 12 months long. 12-month beautifying process with oils and myrrh and spices and ointments. It's a 12-month spa, okay? 12-month spa you're brought through. I don't even know what that looks like. Like, every day is like a ritual, like, okay, pour the oil on, like, do this, do that. 12 months long. That is a long time to go through. Now, what normally happened here is the woman would get that process done. She would go before the king. She would spend a night with the king. And then in most cases, the king would really never see her again. She would go back to the harem. She'd live out her days. And that was the life. That was the life that she would lead. And so that was what would happen most times. But Esther delights the king and earns his favor and ends up becoming queen. Now enters this story called Haman, this guy named Haman. Now this guy was the like second right-hand man to the king. Like he was like the second most powerful man. He was a big deal and everyone knew it and he knew it. And so he loved to kind of be in that space of, yeah, I'm like really important. I'm second most powerful. And because he was so powerful, he would usually like people to bow before him. Even though he wasn't the king, he wanted people to bow before him because he was like the second most powerful person. Now, back to Mordecai. Mordecai is still around. So as he was traveling with Esther, and Esther was right before the king, Mordecai stays with her. And so he would, in that 12-month, like, beautifying process, Mordecai would always be asking in on Esther, seeing how she's doing, talking with her, checking in on her. And so he's now living in that same place because he doesn't want to be far from her. And in fact, he was living so close to that place that at one point he overheard two of the king's men talking about harming the king. So he overheard this conversation they were having about maybe we should actually like harm the king. Maybe we should hurt him. Maybe we should kill him and get him out of there because we don't like him. And so Mordecai hears this and he tells Esther, and Esther tells the king, and the whole plan is, you know, thwarted and it doesn't happen. And so Mordecai does this, but then nothing happens to Mordecai. Nothing, no one is said, nothing's said, and so he kind of just keeps doing his thing. So Mordecai is around the city, and one day Haman sees him and wants him to bow before him. But because Mordecai is Jewish, he wouldn't bow. And so Haman is like ticked. He is not happy, doesn't like it. He's mad. He thinks that everyone should bow before him. To the fact, this guy's ego is so big, to the fact that he thinks, not only should I make Mordecai pay for this, I need to just get rid of all Jewish people in general. Like, I need to really send a message. And so he goes before the king, and he tells the king, look, like, these Jewish people, they're trouble. Like, they're a threat to your kingdom. They're a threat to your empire. You need to get rid of them. And so he convinces the king that they should all be killed, all be destroyed. And so they put this plan in motion that 11 months from the day, they send out this decree that every Jewish man, woman, and child will be killed. Like, on one day. It's like, this day, when this day happens, you can go out, you can kill a Jewish man, woman, or child, no questions asked, no problem, and this is what's going to happen. It's pretty, like wouldn't bow before him, so I'm going to kill every Jewish person. This guy is a little crazy. So that's where we're at this moment in time. And what's even crazier is, even if the king later had, like, a change of heart, he has sealed this letter with his ring, and so because he's kind of viewed as a god, he can't even, like, take it back. Like, can't even say, you know what, I changed my mind. No, we're not going to do that. Like, it's been sent, so it's been done. It's now, like, that's what's going to happen on that day. So Mordecai learns of this plan, and he, being Jewish and having, you know, relatives who are Jewish, obviously, is upset. And so he's in the streets, he's tearing his clothes, he's crying, he's wailing, he's really, really upset, to the point where people are like, hey, Esther, like, your cousin Mordecai is, like, just losing it, like, in the streets. So maybe you should do something about this. So Mordecai gets brought before Esther, and Mordecai tells Esther, like, this is what's going to happen. Like, you need to do something. But Esther is, like, feeling like her hands are tied, because at this time, the king is actually in the inner courts. And if anyone enters that court at this time, unless the king takes his golden scepter and, like, points at that person, then they have to die. So Esther says to Mordecai, look, like, I don't think I can do anything. What do you want me to do? The king's in the inner court. Like, what do you want me to do? I can't do anything. And Mordecai tells her, well, maybe you've been brought here for this time. Maybe all your experiences, maybe all this has brought you to this moment so that you can do something about this. So Esther says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to leave. You're going to fast and pray for 3 days. I'm going to fast and pray for 3 days, and then I'm going to go before the king. I think this is such incredible wisdom on Esther's part at this time. Especially considering that at this time, she's still a teenager. She's maybe 14 to 16 years old. And so she says, you know what? This is what we should do. For 3 days, we're going to fast and pray, and then I'm going to go before the king. Like, she could have said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get some more beautifying done. I'm going to get my hair really nice. And then I'm going to go in and looking all pretty and say, look, king, here's the deal. But no, she says, okay, let's fast and let's pray. Incredible wisdom. I also find it funny that most times women can be labeled as, like, the emotional ones who maybe get upset, who don't really always think rationally. But in this scenario, when Esther finds out, she says, you know what, let's pray, let's fast, and then we'll do it. And when Mordecai finds out, he's in the streets tearing his clothes, crying and wailing. And so I just find that funny. So 3 days go by, and Esther comes before the throne, and the king picks up his scepter and points to her. Crisis averted. It's okay. And not only that, the king says to her, listen, Esther, anything you ask of me, even up to half of my kingdom, I will give to you. What do you want? And again, Esther shows such wisdom and says, can you ask Haman, and then can you come to my feast? Like, I'm throwing a feast for you. So they say, yeah, absolutely we can. We'll do that. And then they go to that feast. And again, the king says, anything you want, like, this isn't that big of a deal. Anything you want, up to half of my kingdom, I will give to you. What do you want? And again, she says, can you come to my feast again, like, tomorrow? Like, I'm going to throw a feast for you and Haman, and then can you guys come to my feast? And again, they say, okay. And so Haman, being this prideful guy, he leaves that finding out, and he's excited. In Esther 5:9, it says, "And Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart." He's pumped. He's thinking like, "I am a big deal. Only two people are coming to this feast. One's me and one's the king." He's leaving happy. In fact, it continues on and says, when he gets home, he talks to his wife and he says, "Guess what, honey? I'm going to a feast tomorrow. Even Queen Esther, let no one but me come to the king and with the king to the feast prepared. And tomorrow I am also invited by her together with the king." He's all excited. But on the way home, he saw Mordecai. And instantly he was angry. Instantly he remembered, this guy won't bow to me. This guy is disrespecting me. This guy is not giving me the respect that I deserve. And so again, he's upset. He tells his wife about it. Like, I can't even be happy about this because of what Mordecai is doing to me. So his wife says, well, let's just get rid of him. So they agree. You know what we're going to do? We're going to prepare a gallows and we're going to have him hang tomorrow. So I'm going to go before the king and I'm going to say, guess what? You know what, king? Like, this guy Mordecai is trouble. Let's get rid of him. It'll be no problem. That's what we're going to do. And so that was what's going to happen. But that same night, the king couldn't sleep. So he decides to look in this book of memorable deeds that they have, that histories would be writing about. And he sees that it was actually Mordecai who told Esther about the plan to have him hurt. And he keeps reading and he sees that. And so he asks his servants and says, what has been done for Mordecai? Like, what have we done for him? Like, he saved my life. Like, what have we done? And they said, nothing. He's confused. Well, how come we haven't, like, he should be rewarded for what he's done. And just as this is happening, I love the timing of this. Haman walks in and he's about to tell the king, hey, we should get rid of Mordecai. And this is what is said in Esther 6, verse 6 to 10. So Haman came in and the king said to him, what should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor? And I love this. Haman said to himself, wait, does the king like someone more than me? Who is it? So he says to himself, whom would the king delight to honor more than me? And then he said to the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and let the horse that the king has ridden, and on which the head, whose head a royal crown is set, and let the robes and the horse be handed over to the one of the king's most noble officials. Let them dress the man whom the noble king delights to honor, and let him lead him on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robes, take the horse as you have said, and do so to Mordecai, the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing you have mentioned. Can you imagine what Haman is thinking at this moment in time? He is so upset. He was literally walking in there to tell them, king, this guy Mordecai, we should get rid of him. And he's probably thinking, yeah, no problem. If I can convince the king to kill every Jew in 11 months, I can convince them that we can get rid of Mordecai. And he walks in and he says, oh yeah, this guy, if you want to honor him, give him robes, give him a horse, give him all this. He says, you know what, great idea, Haman. Go get Mordecai and go do it. So Haman is upset. He is not happy about this. So Haman goes home. He's upset, shows up to the feast. And finally, again, the king asks, queen, like, Esther, what do you want? If anything you ask is yours, what would you like? What can I give you? And so finally, Esther says what she wants in chapter 7, verse 3 to 6. It says, then Queen Esther answered, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted for my wish and my people for my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent, for our affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king. So even that is so wise. She's now revealing, yeah, I'm actually Jewish. All my family is Jewish. So could you save me and my people? And then she throws in, yeah, if it was just that we were slaves, I wouldn't even bother you. But we're all going to be killed. And then the king said to the queen, who is he and where is he? Who has dared to do this? And Esther said, a foe and an enemy, this wicked Haman. And Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Terrified before the king and queen. So the story continues, and what happens is the gallows that Haman had prepared for to have Mordecai hanged in, he himself was hanged in. The place that he had prepared for Mordecai to be killed, he himself was hanged in. And so Esther again says, can you get rid of this decree you've placed to have all the Jewish people killed? And the king can't because it was sealed and it was delivered. So he can't. So instead he sends out another decree and says, all Jewish people, when that day comes, you can fight back. When that day comes, you can fight back and it'll be totally fine. So the day comes, and not only are the Jewish people fighting back, but the king sends his officials to help them. So instead of all the Jewish people being destroyed, all the enemies, the people who wanted the Jewish people gone, were they themselves destroyed. I love this story. I think this story has so many different aspects to it. Like when you read it through, like sometimes you laugh, sometimes you think this is, you know, this is really an evil thing. But I love this story. I think it would make a great movie. But we're gonna look at three things we can take away from this story. Three things we can learn from this story. And the first is this. We need to choose humility over pride. Choose humility over pride. We see the example and the result of both of these in this story. See, Esther chose humility. She didn't let her position change her. She could have just hidden back, fearing that, hey, if I actually let people know that I'm Jewish, like, I could be killed too. She could have hung back thinking, I'm the queen now. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm a big deal now. She chose humility. She risked everything for her people. But Haman chose pride. What I think is so interesting is that Haman was the second most powerful man, arguably, in the world. And his downfall can be traced back because he couldn't let go that one Jewish man wouldn't bow to him. The downfall of the second most powerful man in the world can be traced back because he couldn't let go that one Jewish, unimportant man didn't bow to him. And because of that, he lost everything. If he let that go, he would have continued on being this powerful man with so much like sway in the kingdom, but he couldn't let it go. When we allow our pride to cloud our vision, we disvalue the body of Christ. Because pride stops us from asking for help. When we're going through struggles, going through things that are hard, pride stops us from asking for help. Pride stops us from praying. Pride is, I can deal with it. It's fine. No big deal. Pride stops us from praying and recognizing we need God. Pride isolates us. Because if we don't need anyone, it's hard to be in true community with anyone. Pride will eventually destroy us. We need to choose humility over pride. And pride is so dangerous. Sorry. Because most times it's hidden to us. Most times we don't know that we're being prideful. Most times actually we think that we're awesome. That's kind of what pride is. Pride is so dangerous. The second thing is you need to recognize your influence. You need to recognize your influence. Esther recognized that she had influence. Again, it would have been so easy for her to think, I'm a foreigner. I'm a teenage foreigner. There is no way the king's gonna listen to me. And I'm not gonna risk my life to go in there just to have him say no and then be killed. It'd be so easy for her to think that. It'd be so easy for her to think, listen, I was only chosen because of my looks. That's the only reason why I'm here. There's no way the king is gonna listen to what I have to say. And she would have known that the last queen who disappointed the king had her whole crown, everything stripped away. She would have known that. It would have been so easy for her to think, I can't do anything about this. But Esther used her influence to impact the whole empire. I wonder if later on that the people who were like in the surrounding areas, the Jewish people, would have known that it was Esther who saved them. I think that they would have. I think they would, you know, word would have spread that, wow, like Queen Esther, she's amazing. She recognized that she had influence. And it doesn't matter what age, gender, place you live, talents you have, amount of money, job, school you attend, we all have some influence. We all have some influence. Everyone has influence to a certain extent. Even if you think you have no influence, you do. And sometimes the people that you're influencing don't even know that they're being influenced by you. My wife and I just got back from our vacation. We were in Florida. We went to Disney World. Went on a bunch of rides and roller coasters. And I love roller coasters. Always have since I can remember. I'm the one who wants to, yeah, I'll wait in line. Don't care. I'll go to the front of the line. And funny story, one time when we were first dating, we went to a theme park and we waited extra in line for this like huge ride so we could be in front. And the whole way up, Elise is just so mad at me. Why'd you do this? I'm so mad. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. I'm so mad at you. I'm like, okay, this is good. But I love roller coasters. I love being in the front. I just love them ever since I can remember. And I don't actually remember this story, but my dad told me one time, he said, you've always loved roller coasters. And you want to know why? And I'm like, yeah, well, sure, if you know. He said, the first time you were on a roller coaster, you were really young. It was one of those kids' rides. And he said that I was sitting there beside him. And as it was starting, he looked at me, and I was looking at him. And he realized that I have no idea what to do. It's my first time on a ride. I have no idea. And so he realized that I was looking for him as like a signal. What? How do I respond to this? Like, what should I be doing? And so my dad just started to laugh. He just starts laughing. So I'm like, okay, that's what we do. So I just start laughing too. That's what my dad's doing. So we're on the ride, my dad's laughing, I'm laughing, we finished. He's like, wasn't that awesome? I was like, yeah, it was. It was awesome. I don't even remember that. But ever since then, I've loved roller coasters. Sometimes we don't even know how we've been influenced or who's influenced us. But we need to recognize that we have influence. And more importantly, we need to live like we have influence. We need to make choices like we have influence. We need to live like people are watching us and we are influencing them. Sometimes it's so easy to make a choice and think, oh, who cares? It doesn't matter. We can make a choice that we know is wrong and think, oh, it's no big deal. But we need to live like we have influence. We need to make choices like we have influence. And we need to try to influence people for the kingdom. And the last thing is this. Don't let others define you. We can learn from Esther's life that we cannot let others define us. You see, Esther was chosen for her beauty, but remembered for her actions. She was chosen because she was pretty, but she is remembered because of what she did. Do you think any of the Jewish people cared how good she looked? Did not care. She was remembered and loved because she saved them. Her beauty did nothing to save her people, but her wisdom and actions did. It would have been so easy for Esther to think, listen, like, I can't do anything. Like, I have no say. I'm literally just here for my looks. That's who I am. Yeah, I'm pretty. I'm beautiful. That's great. But I can't really do anything else other than that. And she could have defined herself as that. It would have been easy to allow herself to think, like, I don't really have anything that I can do. And it would determine what she would do. It would determine her limits. It would have been so easy for her to do that. It would have been so easy for her to go to that place. But she didn't allow what others say to define what she can do. And we can't either. I think so often we let others define who we are and what we can do. We let others define, oh, we can't do that because this is how I'm known. This is how people view me. This is who I am. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't, you know, talk to my coworkers about God because I'm viewed as the quiet person. You know, I can't talk to my coworkers about God because sometimes when I'm really upset, I might swear. Sometimes we think that because this happened or that happened, we can't make a difference and we let others define who we are, but we can't. Because when we do that, we let others define us when the only person who should is Jesus. The reality is that it starts and ends with who Jesus says we are. We can't let others define who we are. And there are a million excuses we can make, but the reality is it starts and ends with who Jesus says we are. I think we can learn so much from Esther. So much from Esther. We need to remember to be humble and not be prideful. Because Haman, the second most powerful man in the world, was destroyed because he was so prideful he couldn't let one thing go. We need to recognize that we have influence. That where you are right now, it doesn't matter how old, how young, you have influence. We need to leverage and use that influence for good. Because the flip side of that is you could also influence for the bad. We need to recognize that we have influence and live like it. And we can't let others define us. We can't let others say define who we are. We can't let what others think define what we do. We can't let what people say determine the path that we go down. I hope moving forward that all of us can remember these three things. I think they're very, very important. And I would encourage you, read through the whole book of Esther. It's not super long, but it even goes into more detail of what's went on, but it's a great story. And see what you can learn, because the amazing thing about the Bible is that every time we read it, we can pick out different things. So let me pray for you, and then we can go on our way. God, we thank you so much for your word and the truth that we get from it, the lessons that we can learn from it. God, I pray that all of us would be humble, that we wouldn't let pride get into the way of our walk with you, that we wouldn't let pride become something that stops us from connecting with you, that we wouldn't let pride stop us from connecting with others in our community. God, I pray that we would recognize the influence that we can have for you, the impact that we can make for you. And God, I pray that we would never be defined by what anyone says that we are except for you. God, we love you. We thank you that you are so good to us. We ask that you go with us this week in everything that we do. We love you. We ask in your name. Amen.